Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Friday, the 21st of March. A major conference, it's a national conference, this coming Monday at the Hubert Humphrey Center at the University of Minnesota. It is on the vice presidency, and it's looking at the selection of the vice presidential running mates in 2008. As both the Democratic and Republican parties move towards selecting their respective presidential nominees, attention is shifting to the selection of the vice presidential running mate. The increased power and responsibility of the vice presidency under Richard Cheney makes the selection of the running mate more important than ever. The people putting together the conference have assembled an impressive list of participants, including our guest, actually, this first hour of the program, who's going to be directing a lot of the conversation. He's director of the Center for the Study of Politics and Governance, Larry Jacobs, and has been on our show several times. Some of the participants include Tommy Thompson, former governor, of course, of Wisconsin and U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services. Also, Vice President Walter Mondale will be speaking, and a number of others as well. Lawrence Jacobs is a professor, and he is director of the he's chair of the Center for the Study of Politics and Governance, and they are sponsoring this conference. He's also a professor of political science. His expertise includes presidential and legislative politics, elections and voting behavior, public opinion and polling, American political history, Midwestern swing states, third-party politics, Social Security, and healthcare policy. He has written a number of books, including Inequality in American Democracy, Healthy, Wealthy, and Fair, Politicians Don't Pander, Political Manipulation and the Loss of Democratic Responsiveness, The Health of Nations, Public Opinion, and the Making of Health Policy. His work has been discussed in a number of mass media outlets, and he is our guest this hour. We'll branch into some other topics, too, because there is some other news. Bill Richards is evidently endorsing Barack Obama today in Portland, Oregon. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the breach of the passport files of Barack Obama. We'll look at Hillary Clinton going up in the polls as a result of Jeremiah Wright. But we'll start with the vice presidency, which may be something that's too often ignored. And welcome your phone calls. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, the Milwaukee line is 414-227-2050, or feel free to send an email to Professor Lawrence Jacobs, and that is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Professor Jacobs, hello. Thanks so much for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
This is a major national conference, and it's something that we overlook at times, don't we, who the vice president is. People say, so what? But it's important.
It is important, and it's the role and responsibilities and, frankly, the power of the vice presidency have changed enormously over the last 30 years. You go back before the presidency of Jimmy Carter and vice presidency of Walter Mondale, and the vice president was often derided. Lyndon Johnson famously made fun of and humiliated Hubert Humphrey. They had no role, and they were not even in the White House. They were kind of parked off in a corner. A lot changed when Walter Mondale became vice president. Jimmy Carter and Mondale started what is now known as the modern vice presidency, where the vice president is part of the White House. Decision-making gets the same information as the president. His staff are significant, and he's involved, the vice president's involved, in all the major meetings. So this is a key office. And unfortunately, it rarely gets attention other than the big kind of press conference when they announce who the vice presidential candidates will be.
Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, all too often in history, the vice presidents have become president.
Exactly, yeah. You look back, and this has certainly been a real theme over the course of history, where you see presidents dying or becoming incapacitated even for a period of time. Some may remember when Ronald Reagan was shot in Washington, was under surgery, vice president steps in at that point. Even more ordinary sort of medical conditions. And then you have the tragedies, either assassination or just illness. I think that may be an issue this year because John McCain would be the oldest president, if he were to win, to be sworn in for the first term.
Mm-hmm. The old rules for selecting running mates, we look at, or at least in the past, people have looked at regions creating a balanced ticket so that you can be sure and get votes in different part of the country. Is that still a consideration, Professor Jacobs, or not?
It might be a consideration, but it's not a big one. So if you look at the last few, you've got George Bush picking Dick Cheney, different part of the country, but you know certainly Montana is not a major state and not a state that's in much play. They're very similar in terms of their orientation in the world and politics. You've got Bill Clinton choosing Al Gore. Again, they're very similar. They come from the same region in that case. So the old idea of balancing does not seem to be playing the same role as it did when, for instance, John Kennedy from Massachusetts chose Lyndon Johnson from Texas.
Cheney, would you say he's been called the most powerful vice president ever? Is that a fair description of him?
I think it is, and I want to be very careful. This is not a political statement.
Mm-hmm.
This is not about disagreeing or agreeing with Vice President Cheney's position. This is really an institutional statement about the role that the Vice President Cheney and his office have assumed within the White House. This is unprecedented in several very important ways.
He probably wouldn't care if you agreed with him or not, though, considering his statement out of the Mideast this week, right? So,
yeah, exactly. Where he was, a reporter asked him about the fact that about 2/3 of Americans disagreed or opposed the war in Iraq, and his response was that you said so.
Yeah. You have gathered an impressive list of participants in this conference, haven't you?
Well, you know, we're trying to bring together some of the best experts and scholars in the country on the presidency and how the vice presidency interacts with the president, along with some of the key players, including Vice President Mondale, who will be giving the closing address, reflecting back on what he created and how it's evolved over time.
Mm-hmm. If you had to come up with a list of some of the more effective vice presidents, who would you select, Professor Jacobs, and why would you put them on the list?
I think we've had a number of very effective vice presidents. I think Vice President Mondale is clearly a pioneer, and the way in which he served as a critical integrator within the Carter White House, the way in which his staff was enmeshed in the White House, took on a lot of major projects for President Carter and allowed President Carter to do more things. And just to give one example, China, the opening of China, which, of course, Richard Nixon took the first step by going to China, and then President Carter normalized relations. It was Vice President Mondale who then went to China in 1979 with the trade and cultural and military and national security arrangements that now define that relationship. And it took quite a bit of work of kind of bashing the bureaucracy to get them out of the old way of thinking onto this very different approach that we see paying off. I mean, we're working with China and North Korea today to try to bring that situation under control and get the nuclear weapons demilitarized. That would not have happened without that opening.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a number of other places, both abroad and at home, where Carter was able to use his vice president. H.W. Bush, President Bush's father, was also very effective vice president, drew on a lot of the Mondale precedents. We see that in terms of the effort to restrain regulation, and we see it in a number of other areas, including national security.
How important, you mentioned the Kennedy-Johnson pairing, which seemed to be pretty unlikely in terms of temperament, particularly in terms of temperament, two guys who weren't very fond of each other, done probably for political reasons in those days. It would strike me as though it would be very difficult to have a vice president that you didn't like very much.
Yes, and I think as the relationship has evolved and the vice president has become such an integral part of how the White House operates, this chemistry issue is important, but even more so the governing experience. Clearly, this was a major factor in why George Bush, the current president, chose Dick Cheney. Cheney's been in Washington and worked there for decades. That was very valuable. They tended to see the world and Washington in similar ways. You could say the same thing about Clinton choosing Gore. They were very similar in a lot of respects, with both in terms of the overall public philosophy, but also in the way in which they governed and they liked each other. The governor of my state, Tim Pawlenty, often mentioned as a possible running mate because the people around McCain report that the senator enjoys spending time with Pawlenty and values the way he sees things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would think that would be important advice, counsel as well. To value the way somebody thinks is fairly important.
And there's a lot of time they spend together.
Right.
This is not like the old days where, you know, Lyndon Johnson would, you know, treat Hubert Humphrey like adults, at least when I was a kid, treated children.
Mm-hmm.
Seen and not to be heard from.
Mm-hmm. Somebody brought up Hubert Humphrey in a show a couple days ago, and I wanted to toss this. It's slightly off topic, but it was interesting to me that Hubert Humphrey would have won the 68 election had the Illinois delegation been seated. I don't remember this history very well, and there was something about winner take all in California. If those two had changed, he would have been the nominee.
Well, Hubert Humphrey was the nominee in 1968. The big battle in 68 was that Humphrey barely even ran in the primaries and barely participated at all in the nomination battle. And he was anointed. And the key, 68 is often pointed to because it's the Rubicon. We've got the primaries and caucuses established during the progressive era in the early 1900s, but they're basically not very important in terms of choosing either the Democratic Party or the Republican Party nominee. 68, when Humphrey's anointed, even though there was, you know, more support perhaps for some of the other candidates coming out of that process, triggered a major reform in the McGovern-Frazier Commission, which then has created this process where most of the delegates, overwhelming majority, 80% or so on the Democratic side and over 90% on the Republican side, are chosen in the primaries and caucuses. So the power has shifted from the party bosses, 68 before, to these delegates chosen in the primary and caucuses.
And that all happened. Of course he was the nominee. Maybe I got the story totally wrong, that he wouldn't have been the nominee, or is there something?
That is absolutely right. He would not.
Okay.
He would not have been the nominee if he had run the way he ran at 68. Now, knowing a little bit about Hubert Humphrey.
I'm sure you do.
I'm sure he would have run full steam if it was this process back then.
Hmm.
The truth was, strategically, the focus was on those kind of party bosses and the leaders of the parties around the state, and that's where he put a lot of his work and effort.
Yeah, interesting. So let's look at the current. Let me ask you about whether or not we take into consideration when we go to vote in November who the vice presidential nominee is. Is it as important to Americans as it should be?
No, it should be much more important.
Hmm.
And the way I would put it is that we now have, and I think this is something we both parties are looking at and need to look at, we have two rivals for the office and the seat of the president. And Vice President Cheney has created a new set of precedents, new set of powers, and has reconfigured the office of the vice presidency to enormously expand his influence beyond what we've seen in Republican and Democratic vice presidents up until this point in our history. So given the importance of that office and the importance it's taken on recently, it's very important to take a hard look at who will that next vice presidential candidate be, what kind of person are they, and what's their view about the nature of presidential power and the distribution of power between the president and the vice president.
And because he reconfigured the office, does that mean that it will forever be reconfigured?
Well, I would say there's a disagreement about that.
Hmm.
Some say, well, this was just a decision by the president, it's a very personal decision. George Bush came into office not terribly experienced, and Vice President Cheney was able to capably step in and show him how Washington works. If John McCain were to become president, or Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama, they have a very different set of experiences and, frankly, you know, orientations to the office, and they would likely not cede as much power to the vice president as this one has.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I would say this is kind of like having a loaded gun on the table.
Mm-hmm.
We see this often in the way in which the White House has developed over time, that it takes on, it's an evolving institution and office. And when a precedent is set, it very often sticks. And you see it kind of continuing in different ways. So just to give an example, I think you'd be very hard-pressed to find any case where Vice President Mondale or Vice President Bush would have taken positions that openly challenged the president's position or the administration's position. And there are several clear cases of that by Vice President Cheney, and a number, I would say, indirect cases of that, where he's clearly played a role in the information that's being filtered into the White House. That was unthinkable before. And the question is, how do you kind of get that genie back in the bottle? Do you want that genie back in the bottle?
Right. Probably the American people would say yes. The president should be the president. The vice president shouldn't assume presidential responsibilities.
Well, I think that's a reasonable discussion to be had. The problem is we're not having it. And I think it's too much of a kind of personality-based or kind of pop politics sort of discussion we've had up to this point. The purpose of this conference on Monday is to say we've got some very important decisions to make about the next vice president. So far, we're not really taking it on.
How often have the front runners in a race teamed up, or even those who have been competing against each other in the primaries, teamed up to become a ticket? And has that worked, or is it quite rare?
Again, thinking of the modern era, since 1968, not terribly common. You could think of a couple cases, most recently the Kerry Edwards ticket, but it's not common. And part of the reason is the chemistry you're talking about. Part of it is the battle scars that build up. And there's also the important issue about approach to governing. The candidates are running. They're often running because they see an important role for themselves, and they differ from the others in the battle.
We're going to welcome phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. Joining us in Milwaukee, 414-227-2050. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, we're talking about a major conference taking place this Monday, and the director of the Center for the Study of Politics and Governance at the Hubert Humphrey Center at the University of Minnesota is putting it together and will be the moderator for many of the sessions that include participation by Tommy Thompson and also by Vice President Walter Mondale. The role of the vice presidency, why is it important? Why do we tend to not pay as much attention to it as we should? Our number, 800-486-8655. Our lines are filled right now, but you'll be able to get through eventually. And we also have this email, so that's talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Professor Lawrence Jacobs is our guest this hour of the program. He's running a major conference on the vice presidency at the Hubert Humphrey Center at the University of Minnesota on Monday, picking the vice presidential nominees. What should we look for? 800-486-8655 in Milwaukee, 414-227-2050. One line is open if you'd like to take it. Jim from Salt Lake City. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Kathleen. Hey, I was wondering what your guests would think if Mr. McCain or Senator McCain would choose Senator Lieberman as a running mate.
Well, I think that would be a pretty interesting choice, and in a couple different ways. One, they obviously have very good personal chemistry. They tend to have a pretty similar governing perspective. I mean, obviously, Lieberman was a Democrat until he was essentially forced out of the party in Connecticut during his reelection run. So there would be some policy differences, particularly in the domestic side. And I think that would be a real question mark for the McCain campaign. They have a challenge with conservatives in their party already. Picking Lieberman would create real questions and maybe some backlash among conservatives. Electorally, I think it would be a brilliant move. It would further help McCain position himself with independent voters.
I keep thinking, as I see the two of them in the Mideast together, that it's not by chance that Lieberman is by McCain's side in every picture that you see.
Well, I think, I mean, this is clearly a very helpful partnership for John McCain. And if Lieberman is not a VP candidate, I think he'll be offered a senior position in the McCain administration were John McCain to win. it helps McCain, you know, again, with independents. I mean, this race is going to come down to who can win over the 10 or 15% who are not in the Democratic Republican parties. I think we're going to see a very high level of unity within both parties. And it's going to come down to who can swing over those other voters. In between 2006, very difficult year for Republicans among those voters. The particular challenge John McCain has is that he came out of the battle for the nomination with large numbers of conservatives across his coalition. That is, the economic conservatives who want no new taxes. Well, Lieberman has voted for plenty of taxes. The social conservatives on issues like abortion and stem cell research, which, you know, Lieberman has been a liberal on. And then military conservatives, on that issue, I think Lieberman is going to line up very well with John McCain.
Mm-hmm. I would think that the Democrats, be it Clinton or Obama, are going to have a trickier time picking their nominee because of the nature of this campaign, which is becoming more and more bitter, and the divisive nature of the race issue, et cetera. They're going to have to be pretty careful about who they choose.
I think that's right. This is going to be a difficult moment. I think the rules, as much as they exist up to this point, are going to be tossed out the window. You've certainly heard some chatter about, well, you know, could there be Obama-Clinton ticket? You know, Obama kind of pushed back against some of the suggestions by the Clinton ticket that she'd be willing to consider him as the vice presidential candidate. He responded, gee, that's interesting. I'm ahead in terms of delegates and popular vote.
Mm-hmm.
I might consider you.
Right, right.
So I think, you know, I think this is going to be important. Again, though, if you accept this setup of the election as a battle for the independents, the real challenge for whoever becomes the nominee is to think about positioning themselves in the middle, mm-hmm. with that independent. So if Obama was the candidate, you know, strategically, probably someone like Sam Nunn would be, you know, the kind of choice he would want to make to help politically.
Mm-hmm.
The question would be how whether Obama sees someone like Nunn as sharing some of his important policy and also governing philosophies.
Today, if it hasn't happened already, Governor Richardson is throwing his support for Senator Obama. Is he being thought of, do you think, as this guy's got a lot of experience, people like him? Is he a possible candidate for vice presidency, do you think?
I think they'll certainly give him a close look, and I'm sure there have been conversations behind the scenes about this.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he'll be in the group. My hunch is, at the end of the day, once you get the hard hat political types involved, they're going to move more in the direction of Sam Nunn or someone in that kind of mold. I think the bigger issue about Richardson is it's showing that folks are doing the math and thinking that Hillary Clinton really is probably doesn't have much of a shot here to win the nomination. I think we're probably going to see more endorsements of that sort, and maybe some of the superdelegates starting to break decisively for Obama.
Really? You think that will happen soon?
Well, I think it's going to happen between now and just after the Pennsylvania primary in April 22nd. But I think this could be kind of the first, dink in the dam.
Hmm.
Clinton people have been trying to say this is going on and on. And yet as folks do the math on what it would take for her to win and the type of, damaging episodes like this recent one with Reverend Wright or the visa leak, they don't like that. So I think the party itself is probably going to start to make some decisions about what's best for the party, not what's best for Hillary Clinton.
Interesting. But she has, as a result of all of this, I don't know what the polls will be a week from now, but she's gone up in the polls.
Yep, she has. But again, if you do the math, and I think, you know, this is one of those situations where numbers really matter. She's far enough behind, both in terms of the popular vote and the delegate count, that she's going to have to start winning the remaining races by 20 points or more.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't think most people see that as realistic. I mean, she did very well in Ohio and won by 10 points.
Mm-hmm. So why doesn't she quit?
Well, I think that's a good question. Frankly, I think most other candidates who are in her position would either quit or not have the opportunity to continue because the fundraisers
really
quit on them.
Oh, that's interesting.
But I think she's certainly a fighter, and there's certainly opportunity for her to catch up. I would not say that that's a done deal by any means. And I think as long as there's a chance, she's going to fight like heck. And Pennsylvania, you know, represents probably the most significant last opportunity for her, particularly after the Michigan and Florida options closed down yesterday.
Thanks, Jim, so much for your call. Let's go to John from Mercer next. Oh, I got two lines here at the same time. Why? How have I done that? There we go. John from Mercer. Hi.
Hey, Kathleen, am I on?
You are, John. Hi.
Yeah. Hi. How are you? Kathleen, I'm strictly a Democrat, and I read an editorial about John McCain possibly would be interested in, like, Condoleezza Rice.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to comment on that. Not only does she bring integrity and the female presence, but she knows her NFL football. I thought maybe that'd be a nice icebreaker in the dealing with the men. I'd like to have a comment.
That might sway you, huh, John? Would you would you switch parties?
yes.
Professor Jacobs.
Well, I think that's an intriguing possibility, and I think Condoleezza Rice has clearly distinguished herself. She'll be the only major cabinet secretary to have lasted the full 8 years, it appears. She's obviously performed, remarkable service to the country. Again, I think you're going to see the hard hats putting their calculators together and figuring out whether it works in terms of vote getting, which she has no experience in, really. In terms of governing, I think there may be some questions from John McCain's point of view. When you look back at Condoleezza Rice's performance as National Security Advisor, there are a lot of folks who feel like she didn't do a very good job in managing the initial steps leading up to the Iraq War and then its implementation. And I think, you know, this is one of those key issues about governing and how you approach it, that for a president it's going to matter a lot. And for John McCain, who knows quite a bit about national security and been involved and been a critic of the way in which the Iraq War was conducted, particularly at the beginning, that could be a real stumbling block for him.
Mm-hmm. And who are these people? You've mentioned them a couple times, the politicians, the hard hats who get together to figure this out mathematically. Who are they, directors of the campaigns?
Yeah, they're directors of the campaigns, and each party has got a group of about a dozen people. Some of them have formal titles. Some of them are important influentials who are consulted. One of Mr. Mondale's close aides for many years was a guy named James Johnson, who was involved in John Kerry's selection process for VP. I think he chaired the committee. And you tend to see Johnson, you know, in a number of very important party positions. Same thing on the Republican side. Obviously, McCain's top people, his top political person, Charlie Black, and the head of the campaign would be involved. But then there would be another circle of folks who have worked with the party for many, many years and are trusted for their judgment. And the point of this is, to us, from the outside, it looks like, you know, who likes whom. On the inside, there's going to be a lot of rigorous thought as to what each candidate would bring to the ticket in terms of policy and being able to be a kind of, at least after Cheney's, a co-presidency or an advisor, a senior advisor to the president.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for the call. But, of course, foremost among my thoughts will be, let's win this.
It will definitely be let's win it. You know, one of the kind of challenges in looking at the vice presidential selection, it can help, and I think in two states in particular it can help for this year, which would be Ohio and Florida, because those, again, will probably be the key state. But overall, there's not a lot of evidence that the selection of the VP determines the outcome. Again, that's overall, but you know, I think in some of these individual states it could play a role.
Ohio and Florida again?
Well, Ohio and Florida, in fairness, I think, you know, after you get past those two, our neck of the woods is going to get a lot of attention again. Iowa, Minnesota, and Wisconsin, we're three of the closest states. When you add up our electoral college votes, same total as Florida. So folks should strap in. We'll get plenty of attention.
Well, that's good. You can have many more conferences, right?
Actually, we're going to have a huge conference during the Republican convention.
Oh, you are?
We're going to have in really the best people in the country on domestic and foreign policy.
Ooh.
Including potentially some of the cabinet secretaries and folks who have been cabinet secretaries.
Oh, great. We have an email, Carolyn from Waukesha. During the Clinton administration, did Hillary Clinton have more power than Al Gore? I thought there was an article in Time magazine or something this has been written about, that she had a bigger office than he did. If she is elected, would she give Bill the same power?
Great question. I don't know. It'll be one of these things people will be debating about for years and years were that to transpire. Al Gore had a major advantage over Hillary Clinton, which is he had a very large staff. And having a large staff that is fully in the paper flow, that is national security information, the memos on policy, that's really what power is about when you get into a large organization like the executive branch and the executive office of the president. And Hillary Clinton never had the same level of institutional thrusters in getting involved.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, she had unparalleled access to the president, and there were moments when, you know, that was evident. But the kind of day-to-day operation of the White House, Al Gore had, you know, quite a bit of sway.
We welcome more phone calls. A couple lines are open if you'd like to join the conversation. Picking the vice presidential nominees, what should we look for? Major conference at the Hubert Humphrey Center at the University of Minnesota this coming Monday. Larry Jacobs is with us, director of the Center for the Study of Politics and Governance at the Hubert Humphrey Center, and he'll be moderating many of the panel discussions that include appearances by Tommy Thompson and Vice President Walter Mondale. And we're going back to phone calls now. We go to Abraham from Delavan. Hi, Abraham.
Hi, Kathleen. I had a question for Mr. Jacobs. I wanted to know what he thought of Nader's running mate, Matt Gonzalez of San Francisco.
You know, to be honest, I'm not an expert on Matt Gonzalez. I know the general you know, kind of tenor of it. My own view is that this is going to be more of a vanity run by Nader. If you look at, you know, how he's done each time since 2000, 2004, I guess, it's been downhill. And I look at what's going on in the Democratic Party with a big caveat that we're going to see what happens between now and the convention. But at this point, it looks like the Democrats are very much focused on doing whatever it takes to defeat the Republican versus the dynamics in 2000, which was we're sick and tired of Clintonism. We want to break from that, which at least, you know, gave rise to some of the Nader support. So I'm not seeing the Nader candidacy as that significant, and, you know, we'll see. But I'm not expecting that to do as well, even as it did in 2004.
Could we, though, conceivably, the polls are showing, be it Clinton or Obama, that they're running neck and neck with McCain at this moment, and I know a lot of things can happen before the election takes place, but could it be that even if he polls 1% or 2%, he could make a big difference?
I think that would be the case, and again, you'd want to look at which states he got to support in. If he got, you know, support in Massachusetts, New York, and California, you know, I don't think the Democratic ticket would be that concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Because those states, in all likelihood, are going to go pretty significantly for the Democrats at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're talking Ohio and Florida, with Nader doing that well, it would be a real problem. One thing to keep an eye on is how the Libertarian Party does. They've been getting on the ballot in most states, some elections, all the states, or almost all the states. They had Ron Paul in the nomination battle on the Republican side. He had been a Libertarian candidate. He's ruled out running as a Libertarian, but his candidacy for the Republican nomination energized a lot of folks in the Libertarian
movement. Sure did. We've heard from many of them.
And their that energy may well translate into a pretty vigorous Libertarian run. Now, that could be significant given this pool or reservoir of conservatives who are very angry at John McCain. They just don't think he's a small government conservative.
Mm-hmm.
And so we may actually see more support for a Libertarian candidate, particularly in states like Florida and Ohio and Wisconsin and Minnesota and Iowa, them for an 8er candidate.
More phone calls in a moment. Picking the vice presidential nominees, what should we look for? Our guest is Professor Lawrence Jacobs. He is director of the Center for the Study of Politics and Governance at the Hubert Humphrey Institute of Public Affairs, University of Minnesota. He is the Walter and Joan Mondale Chair for Political Studies and running a major conference on Monday at the center that will include appearances and discussion from Tommy Thompson, Vice President Walter Mondale, and many others. Here's the number. Join us if you'd like, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. We have a couple lines open for you right now. Thanks, Abraham, for your call. Talk at WPR.org if you'd like to send an email. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go back to phone calls now for Professor Lawrence Jacobs, and our next caller is Carol from Milwaukee. Hi, Carol.
Good morning. My question is a little bit off topic or at least broader than the vice presidential issue. My concern is that some time ago, not too long ago, I heard that Karl Rove was hired as the campaign manager for John McCain. And right after that, we have seen a series of things that have totally disrupted the Democratic Party. We have seen McCain's popularity rise, and we have things like Jeremiah Wright being broadcast in snippets. We have the passport incident. We have all these things, and I have not heard again Karl Rove mentioned. So I'm wondering if your guests can address his.
Sure.
You know, I don't remember the announcement that Karl Rove moved over as the campaign manager for McCain.
I don't either. I know that I've heard that he's involved in it, but not as campaign manager, Carol.
Oh, that's probably true. But his involvement.
Yeah, he's involved, though it's unclear what level, and there would be, you know, number of filters. McCain has a, you know, staff that resurrected him. I can assure you, he feels pretty loyal to them. So I don't think it's terribly realistic that Rove is going to march in and take over. The other part of this is John McCain, no doubt, feels some real resentment towards Karl Rove for what happened to him in 2000
mm-hmm.
nomination battle, particularly in the state of South Carolina, where there was some vicious rumor spread. McCain was very open about it at the time, but he's not really talked about it since. And my impression from that episode is that McCain blames Rove for that. In any case, your basic point is, you know, are we going to see some of the hardball tactics coming out of the McCain campaign that we've seen in other races? And, you know, I think this is about party organization on both sides. You know, you look at the way the Democratic campaign has been conducted. Some pretty tough stuff going on there as well.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, look for hardball politics. It's going to be tough. It's going to be very divisive, I think, when we get into November. The kind of nice talk at this point is just talk. I think this is going to be a pretty brutal campaign. And for whatever the acrimony that has existed within the parties over the nomination battle, it will be several magnitudes larger, because the differences between
they're substantial.
The Democratic and Republican mm-hmm. candidates are huge.
Mm-hmm.
And the stakes, as both set of partisans see it, are huge. You combine that with some pretty tough campaigners, I think it's going to be nasty.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much, Carol, for the call. Do you want to comment on this story, for people who haven't heard it broke last night, the State Department trying to determine whether three contract workers had a political motive for looking at Barack Obama's passport file. Is that a small story or a large story?
You know, it's one of those stories, you see them kind of pop up during campaign, and you don't really know what to make of it. You know, I think that's something we'll all be keeping a close eye on to see if there's some kind of, you know, political high-level operation going on that's aimed at either undermining Obama during the nomination battle or setting him up during the general election. and obviously there could be different sets of people involved. So I'd say at this point it's too early to figure out whether that's a real a major story or just one of these passing, not very deep sort of pieces.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Tom from Sturgeon Bay next. Hi, Tom.
I've just got a quick question. I don't think this one has come up. I've been in and out of the car today. Would Barack Obama consider somebody like a Wesley Clark, a retired military presence, as a running mate? And do you think that would help his chances should he win the nomination?
In my view, and I'm sure there are others who would disagree, Wesley Clark could be a real possibility. Wesley Clark did not perform that well when he ran in 2004. I think there's a lot of respect for him, but you know, I think there was a sense that maybe he didn't have what it took on the political side. And when you get down to this kind of decision, I think people are going to be risk-averse. So I'm not sure Wesley Clark would be at the top of the list, though he's clearly getting some discussion. Again, as I mentioned, I think someone like Sam Nunn, and there are others like him, who are proven policymakers, who maybe even have a conservative streak in, on national security, and would play well in middle America. I think those folks are going to be probably a little higher up on the list.
Mm-hmm. But there, here again, now you have somebody who's quite closely associated with the Clinton campaign. Would they be so generous of spirit as to say, all right, I'm for you now, and I'm just as much for you as I was for her?
Well, here we are in March. If this race were to wrap up, let's say, in a month or so, by the time you roll around to June or July, I think passions will have cooled a little bit. Memory is a funny way of kind of fading into the ether. other than the South Carolina sort of meltdown that McCain experienced, that lasts for a lifetime. But I think a lot, some of this, the edge is going to be taken off, and the focus is going to be, okay, what do we have to do as Republicans to beat the Democrats, or vice versa? And in that context, we've seen some really odd alliances.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Tom, so much for your call. Gino from Milwaukee, hi.
Hi, good morning. Yeah, I was wondering, what about Jeb Bush down in Florida? He's out of a job right now, and he would pretty much shoe in Florida, too.
Well, Jeb Bush, of course, is a very popular governor when he served in Florida. I think the issue with Bush is the name. We've got President Bush, whose approval ratings are somewhere in the mid to low 30s. We haven't had a president in the modern era with such low approval ratings for such a long time. And I think, frankly, McCain's going to be doing everything he can to escape from the word Bush. And to put his brother on the ticket would be counterproductive for him.
Mm-hmm. It is amazing how long we've had a couple families in office, isn't it, when you think about it? It's a long time.
Yeah, I think to some extent what we're getting is the branding of political names and figures. And you'll often see, I know my daughter watches these movies that have, part 5, 6, and so forth. And what's going on there is that the producers know they can bring back some of the audience. Part of what happened with George W. Bush, our current president, it appears that you had a number of people, particularly donors, who liked his dad and therefore willing to shift over and support the son. And then there were a number of party people and then general election voters who saw Bush and thought, oh, I can vote for him again. And it just cuts down the cost of introducing new product, if you'll accept that phrase. Whereas you bring in a new name, Barack Obama, you're going to have to put a lot of money into achieving that same level of name recognition.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call. We have lines open if you'd like to join the conversation. The number is 800-486-8655. And we're happy to have Professor Lawrence Jacobs with us again. He is director of the Center for the Study of Politics and Governance at the Hubert Humphrey Institute of Public Affairs at the University of Minnesota. They are having a major conference this coming Monday, picking the vice presidential nominees. What should we look for? And looking at these kinds of areas, who's been chosen as vice president, important qualities in a vice presidential running mate, why is the vice presidential nominee important, the rising power of the modern vice presidency, what should we look for in the next vice president? All of those will be discussed, and some of the participants in the conference include Vice President Walter Mondale and former governor of Wisconsin and Secretary of Health and Human Services Tommy Thompson, and many others will be looking at this important topic. Will, do you think, those powers that be, those those power brokers who are going to be intimately involved in choosing the vice president. I'm wondering if any of them are coming to your conference. And secondly, will they be looking at the important, thoughtful kinds of questions that you're looking at on Monday?
Yes.
They will.
I can guarantee they're going to be looking at it in part because the conference is going to be carried on C-SPAN.
Oh, it is? Great.
And I think it'll get some other press coverage.
Uh-huh.
So I think it'll cross people's radar screen. The other part of it is that the conference was partly informed by what we know about how other vice presidential selection processes were run. Some of the people involved in it, like Richard Moe, will also be presenting.
Oh.
Are involved in the conference itself. So we have, you know, brought together kind of a really nice mix of good, solid, independent, nonpartisan research with the real people who are involved in this process, including such esteemed policymakers as Tommy Thompson, who, by the way, is also mentioned as a possible VP candidate, and Vice President Mondale, who remains a significant figure in the Democratic Party, as well as the pioneer of the modern vice presidency.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad it's going to be on C-SPAN. I didn't know that. So people can tune in. And it starts at 8:30 Monday morning?
That's right.
Okay. Carol from Gutenberg. Hi, Carol.
Oh, hi, Kathleen. I don't have a particular person for vice president in mind, but I sincerely think that the ultimate thing that a person should be is a good diplomat, because we don't need, you know, with the damage that George Bush has done in the world, the next president needs a team player. Someone who's measured in their speaking and their thinking, who's someone who's a very thoughtful person. So I'll take your comments off the air.
Okay, thank you for the call, Carol.
You know, it's a really interesting issue, and I'm going to be very candid. I've thought long and hard about it, and I would agree with Carol. And I think, frankly, most presidents in the past wanted vice presidents who would be kind of senior helper in chief, and that's why they've given so much power voluntarily to the vice presidential office. And yet, there's something about stepping into the White House, taking the oath, that changes people. Vice President Cheney, you know, you go back when you look at some of the news stories, was thought of in some of the ways that Carol just described, the ideal vice presidential candidate. And shortly into his term in office, particularly after 9/11, when we saw an increasing assertion of power, you saw a long time colleagues like Brent Scowcroft, who was the national security advisor for George H.W. Bush, mm-hmm. the first Bush president, who said, "I don't know Dick Cheney anymore. Hmm. I don't know this guy. The guy I knew, you know, didn't operate in the way that he's operating." So I agree, and to be honest, that's one of the points of this conference, to identify some of the attributes in terms of experience, but also temperament that you might want to look for in a vice president. But I'm also going to be candid in saying there's something about the office that I think could change people. The key part here is the way in which the institutional incentives are set up and how we, you know, assess the kind of vice presidency that's evolved apart from party ideology or party loyalty. This is not about, you know, I'm a Republican, I like Dick Cheney, therefore I'm going to support whatever Dick Cheney's done. That would be a real mistake at this point in history. This is a major change in the balance of power within our government. Hmm. And I think it doesn't matter about party. It's really your view about American governance and checks and balance system.
Mm-hmm. Marty from Green Bay. About a minute left, everybody.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. My son just came back from Iraq recently, and I asked him how he felt politically about a lot of things. And I've been in favor of Barack because from the very beginning he said we shouldn't go into this war. And my son said that he doesn't like any politicians, but he was leaning towards Barack, but he also said, "Mom, you know, I'm afraid, though, for him, because I'm afraid someone might try to assassinate him." How critical is it to, I mean, this is just reality, the evil people in the world, but the choice of his vice president, especially in lieu of McCain's age, I mean, realistically, McCain might not be around for much longer, but what is the reality of what that choice needs to be for Barack?
Well, I think it's critical, as I said, historically at this moment, given the rise of the power, the institutional power of the vice presidency, for both sides of the ticket. I can assure you that Barack Obama's getting as good or more Secret Service protection as any candidate to stage in a primary. The concern you have is not being missed.
Right, I'm sure. It's too bad we have to think that. I don't even like to go that direction. You know, it's. Thanks, Marty, very much for your call. Well, have a great conference. I think it's a terrific idea, and we'll look forward to seeing some of it. We're on the air at the same time, but some of it on C-SPAN. Professor Jacobs, thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Professor Lawrence Jacobs is director of the Center for the Study of Politics and Governance at the Hubert Humphrey Institute, the University of Minnesota, and he is running a major conference on Monday, and glad to hear that it will be on C-SPAN if you want to see it, on picking the vice presidential nominees. What should we look for? Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for on-air production here in Milwaukee, and thanks for all of your calls, everybody. News ahead, and we'll return on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.